Okay, good morning. The Operations and Customer Service Committee meeting will now begin. For the record, this is a virtual meeting and all board members and participants are by telephone. For the record, I will now take roll call. Board Member Fulton?
Here.
Board Member Gordon?
Here.
Board Member Rasmussen?
Here.
Board Member Caulfield?
Here.
Thank you. And Board Member Greaves is absent at today's meeting. Board members, at this time, we usually ask for public comments on the agenda, but we do not have any speakers. So we'll go to the first staff report, which is the Operations and Customer Service Update, Stuart Mader.
Thank you, Joyce. Good morning. This is the Operations and Customer Service Report with trends, analysis, and insight for May 2020. Starting with the charts for rail, on-time performance was 95.8%, an increase of 1/10 of a percentage point versus April, and a year-over-year increase of 2.6 percentage points. Contributing factors to customer concerns and on-time performance included COVID-19-related manpower shortage, which contributed to 42 delays on May 3rd, 53 delays on May 10th, and 18 delays on May 17th. Rail equipment reliability, measured as overall mean distance between failures, improved from 92,007 miles in April to 93,119 miles in May. This is the ninth consecutive month of improvement, as well as a year-over-year improvement of 29% versus May 2019 and 41% since January 2019. Moving to rail performance by terminal and time, New York Penn Station trains reported overall on-time performance of 95% in May, a 1/10 of a percentage point decrease from April, and a year-over-year increase of 2.8 percentage points. These on-time performance metrics reflect the impact of the ongoing pandemic, including dramatically fewer customers riding transit, as well as running the reduced rail schedule. Hoboken Terminal trains reported overall on-time performance of 98.1% in May, a 4/10 of a percentage point increase from April, and a year-over-year increase of 4.3 percentage points. System-wide trains reported increases in off-peak and weekend services from April to May. In the on-time performance charts, bars for peak train on-time performance do not appear on the regular charts because rail operations is currently running a modified schedule and holiday schedules do not include peak trains. The additional right shows on-time performance of trains that operated in May during what would normally be considered peak hours, and on-time performance for those trains during the month of May was 96.4%, a 5.2 percentage point year-over-year increase. Moving now to the bus charts. On-time performance was 99.3% in May, an increase of 6/10 of a percentage point versus April. The 12-month rolling average for bus on-time performance was up by 2.7 percentage points year-over-year to 93.8%. These on-time performance metrics also reflect the impact of the ongoing pandemic, including running a modified weekday schedule in May, along with significantly reduced roadway congestion and ridership. Contributing factors to delays included on May 21st, delays at North Penn were caused by road closure due to multi-vehicle accident and mechanical issue, and on May 26th, a road closure due to construction with traffic congestion along the detour route caused service delays. Customer feedback centered on employee performance, customer bypasses, and face coverings. There was a small uptick in customer bypass complaints, which is largely a result of the requirement to limit onboard capacity to 50% per Executive Order 125 to protect customer safety and prevent the spread of COVID-19. When a vehicle approaches the 50% limit, it can't pick up additional passengers, and the operator contacts bus control to advise that an additional bus is needed. An additional 550 daily bus trips are operating to provide additional capacity. Employee performance feedback in all three divisions was investigated and the appropriate corrective actions taken, including supervisors monitoring routes and issues addressed with operators. On-time performance improved for all five major terminals in May. Hoboken Terminal's year-over-year on-time performance went up by 4.6 percentage points from 95.1% to 99.7%. Port Authority Bus Terminal's performance increased as well from 86.2% to 99%. Walter Rand Transportation Center increased from 94.4% to 99.5%. North Penn Station on-time performance improved from 95.2% to 99.8%, and Atlantic City on-time performance improved from 94.8% to 99.7%. Moving to light rail, overall on-time performance was 98.7% in May 2020, exceeding the 97.3% goal and a 2.7 percentage point year-over-year increase. The 12-month rolling average on-time performance for all three light rail lines increased by 7/10 of a percentage point year-over-year to 97.3%. These on-time performance metrics reflect the impact of the ongoing pandemic, including running a reduced schedule on light rail, as well as fewer customers riding. Hudson Bergen light rail on-time performance increased to 98% in May. Contributing factors to delays included door and brake issues on May 2nd, May 8th, May 25th, and May 30th, local police activity on May 2nd and May 30th, fire department activity due to a junkyard fire near the tracks on May 30th, and multiple delays on May 8th due to a car collision with an HBLR security gate that required police assistance. Newark Light Rail on-time performance slightly decreased to 99.9% in May, and Newark Light Rail had no major issues related to on-time performance. Riverline on-time performance slightly decreased to 98.3% in May. Contributing factors to delays included equipment issues on May 4th, May 5th, May 7th, May 9th, May 19th, and May 24th. Passenger interference requiring police assistance on May 4th, May 9th, May 17th, and May 18th. A passenger requiring medical attention on May 6th, and a track obstruction due to a brush fire on Cinnaminson Avenue on May 19th. Customer feedback centered on facility station conditions, door issues, and face coverings. Light rail equipment reliability, measured as mean distance between failure, continues to remain relatively static for Newark Light Rail when compared to the previous month. Hudson Bergen light rail equipment reliability continued to increase for the 12th consecutive month, with an increase from 34,322 miles in April to 37,524 miles in May. And Riverline equipment reliability increased for the 6th consecutive month in May, with an increase from 11,819 miles in April to 12,135 miles in May. On the next page, Access Link on-time performance was 98.8% for May 2020, an increase of 11.1% from May 2019, and a reflection of the impact of the ongoing pandemic, including dramatically fewer customers riding Access Link, along with significantly less congestion on the roads. Trip count was 45,677 for May, a year-over-year decrease of 95,961 from May 2019. The total number of cases for May was 45, a year-over-year decrease of 331. Cases were split 33% for the New Jersey Transit Operations Center and 67% for the regions. Customer feedback centered on service delays, employee performance, and technology. All complaints regarding employee performance are fully investigated and action is taken when warranted. The Operations Center has expanded training to include sensitivity training refresher courses. There were 17 service delay inquiries for May, a year-over-year decrease of 194. The majority of service delay complaints were reported in Region 5, Essex, Morris, Somerset, and Union counties. Service delay complaints are being addressed in several ways, including software upgrades that include faster vehicle location and improved scheduling solutions, the addition of runs during peak hours, increase in service monitoring dashboards, and improved service control training and monitoring. The Communications and Customer Service Department worked with the Access Link team to develop a new Access Link Twitter account, which is planned to go live next week. Moving to customer service statistics, the average speed of answer for transit information centers was 2 seconds, exceeding the goal of 5 seconds. Representatives answered 99% of calls, meeting the goal of 99%. New Jersey Transit received 21 commendations in May, and here are a few. A bus customer wrote in to say, "Shout out to the inspector who was on the corner of Broad and Market Streets this morning as I was crossing to board the number one bus, inspecting to see how many were on and who were masked. It's appreciated." A rail customer called to say, to thank the two conductors who found his lost bag on an M&E train. Derek Matthews, the rear breaker, and Mike Freeman, the conductor, both searched the entire train and safely brought it to customer service. And another rail customer wrote in to say, "Since COVID started, a huge highlight for my 2-year-old daughter is coming down to the tracks at the Waldwick station every day, multiple times a day, to see the trains. All the engineers and conductors on the various trains that have come through have gone an extra small mile to give an extra horn toot or a wave and a hi. It makes my 2-year-old daughter's day and ours to see how happy she is. Please let them know how special it is and how much it means to us." Next, we look at social media reach and engagement. New Jersey Transit social media messages were seen over 3.9 million times in May, which generated over 80,000 engagements and over 6,700 visits to njtransit.com. Moving to the next page, on June 8th, New Jersey Transit launched NJT 2030, the agency's first ever 10-year strategic plan and 5-year capital plan, at a press conference with Governor Phil Murphy and New Jersey Transit President and CEO Kevin Corbett. The strategic and capital plans will guide New Jersey Transit's decision-making, keeping customers' needs at the center of those decisions as the agency moves forward over the next decade. Both are available at njtplans.com. The release of the plans is supported by a social media campaign highlighting each of the strategic plan's 5 goals, the 10 categories of investment in the capital plan, and a cross-section of proposed capital projects throughout the New Jersey transit system. Moving to the next page, here are examples of social media posts highlighting the strategic plan goals. And on the following page, here are examples of social media posts highlighting proposed projects and categories of investment in the 5-year capital plan. Moving to the next page, on June 15th, New Jersey Transit published guidelines titled Your Ride to Recovery, detailing the critical steps being taken to protect customers and employees during the reopening of New Jersey and the region, as New Jersey Transit prepares for customers to return to the transit system. These guidelines are consistent with the Road Back, New Jersey's roadmap for restoring economic health through public health. The plan focuses on New Jersey Transit's commitment to 6 areas: service, cleanliness, distancing, communication, protective equipment and public safety, and screening and testing. It also enforces a shared responsibility approach that relies on customers and employers doing their part as well. Continuing the ride to recovery, beginning Monday, July 6th, New Jersey Transit will operate full weekday service for rail and light rail, providing added capacity in advance of expected ridership increases, and bus return to regular weekday service on June 8th. On the following page, New Jersey Transit shared daily updates on social media to keep customers and employees informed about ongoing efforts to sanitize stations and equipment, as well as service changes designed to enable safe distancing, prevent the spread of infection, and flatten the curve while supporting those traveling for location essential jobs. And on the next page, New Jersey Transit recognized and thanked 3 New Jersey Transit police officers for their role in the apprehension of a suspect in a stabbing at South Amboy Station. New Jersey Transit also continues to work with the U.S. Census Bureau and the Office of the New Jersey Secretary of State to ensure an accurate 2020 census count, which is critical for New Jersey's fair share of federal funding to help strengthen transit. Moving on to the next page, on June 9th, Andrew Schwartz, New Jersey Transit's Director of IT Radio, spoke at the MOVE webinar, Making Transport Talk, on the importance of sophisticated smart transport IT systems for mass transit. And on June 24th, Leota Sanders, VP in the Office of Civil Rights and Diversity Programs, represented New Jersey Transit as a panelist at the African American Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey's State of Black New Jersey 2020 Virtual Economic Summit. Mr. Sanders spoke on a panel discussing economic opportunities for African Americans statewide. And on the next page, on June 2nd, the U.S. Department of Transportation awarded New Jersey Transit a $7 million grant for up to 8 zero-emission and low-emission battery electric buses to serve Newark and Irvington and to build necessary charging, refueling, and maintenance infrastructure. New Jersey Transit thanks the New Jersey Congressional delegation for helping secure this funding to enhance service and air quality. On June 24th, the Federal Transit Administration awarded New Jersey Transit a $13.3 million grant from the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security, or CARES Act, for its local transportation programs for fiscal year 20. This will help sustain existing local service in rural areas in New Jersey used by senior citizens, persons with disabilities, and the economically disadvantaged. New Jersey Transit will distribute the grant funds for operating, planning, capital, and administrative expenses for the existing rural transit providers throughout New Jersey. Moving to the next page, on June 19th, Governor Phil Murphy announced that the Portal Bridge project will move into the engineering phase with full federal funding. This is a major milestone for the economic recovery of New Jersey and reliability on the Northeast Corridor for tens of thousands of New Jersey Transit customers. New Jersey Transit thanks Governor Murphy for his leadership and support, as well as the U.S. Department of Transportation and Amtrak for working together to make this critical project a reality. And to pay tribute to those on the front lines, New Jersey Transit joined fellow transit agencies across the country on April 16th, May 21st, and again a week ago on June 18th to sound the horn in honor of all the transit workers who are keeping essential personnel moving. On the following page, New Jersey Transit has also been hard at work during this time on positive train control, and the PTC project reached a new milestone with the completion of 384 successful revenue service demonstration, or RSD, test runs on the demonstration area between Denville and Summit. New Jersey Transit can now enter into extended RSD beginning June 30th, starting with the Morristown line and Montclair Boone line. And on the last page, as part of New Jersey Transit's commitment to protect customers and employees, the agency has commissioned a study by Rutgers University's Center for Advanced Infrastructure and Transportation on the use of ultraviolet C light for disinfecting the agency's bus fleet from viruses such as COVID-19. The study to be conducted over the next few months will include examining the effectiveness of the UVC wavelength in neutralizing viruses, as well as electronically mapping the interior of different bus models to determine the best placement for the UVC source. Findings would be used to determine the best way to scale and implement the technology on the bus fleet, and testing has already begun at Ironbound Garage. And that concludes the operations and customer service report.
Thank you. Board Member Fulton, any questions or comments?
I'll start with, as usual, a very good and comprehensive report. Thank you. Some observations in general with regard to the report. The first one I would like is some consideration given to issues related to public safety. It strikes me that when you talk about customer service, it's difficult to talk about it without some notion of how we're doing from a public safety perspective. So as we move forward with these reports, I think that would be helpful. Another thought, and it's prompted by information here, is forward-facing capital improvement projects. I think it's always good to talk to them, and moving forward, I think I'd like to see, or we can talk about how to include more of that kind of information with specificity. I mean, maybe a top 10 or top 5 forward-facing capital improvement projects that have direct benefit to customers in a customer service discussion, both those that are going to bring benefits to customers as well as those that create impact to customers while they're underway, with the idea that once they're finished, there will be improvements. So that's two. The third thing that occurred to me sort of as you were speaking relates to interactions between customers and either employees on bus or rail, and or interactions between customers and the call center. You speak to them generally, but there are no numbers associated with it. So I would hope that we could have a conversation about how perhaps we can include some numbers around how those interactions not only are resolved. I mean, you talked about the follow-up associated with the resolutions, but also the number of interactions as a function of trend over time. And I think that's about it. I mean, so again, I think it's a good report. I'd like to see us tightening it up by including some additional empirical data that supports how we're doing in the areas of public safety, how we're doing with projects. I'm talking budget schedule associated with forward-facing capital improvement, and really how our interactions are handled and resolved in a statistical way, both on bus, on rail, in stations, as well as on at the call center. And so I look forward to some discussion, some feedback on these suggestions that I think could help bolster what we derive out of this report. So I have no specific comments other than that. But again, I look forward to being able to talk about how we can strengthen this report going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
No questions or comments other than to endorse Cedric's suggestion about getting some information about capital projects that have an impact on our customers.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No, but thank you for the presentation. It was very well done. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
Hi. Thanks for the great report, and want to congratulate all the hard work that the transit staff did on the Portal North Bridge announcement. Stuart, you had referenced that customer bypass complaints, you had seen an uptick on the bus. Was that coming into the customer service hotline, and were you guys able to determine I'm assuming these were on some of the inner city routes that we're seeing some crowding conditions?
So that feedback uptick was seen in the what comes into customer service. So inquiries, complaints from customers to customer service. So we track those numbers. And yes, it's related to, I wouldn't say so much crowding as it is, it's to keep customers safe. The protocol is that when a bus approaches the 50% capacity limit, the operator can't pick up more passengers, and that's to protect the safety of the customers who are already on board. And that operator contacts bus control, relays that there are additional customers that need to be picked up and an additional bus is needed. And that's where that 550 additional daily trips comes into play. Those additional trips are running in order to provide additional capacity. And so as over time, I think Mike can talk to this in even more detail. You know, we've looked at the trends, buses looked at the trends in where those inquiries from customers come in, and obviously then made sure that there's additional capacity running on those routes.
It should be noted that each of these complaints is not just a trending line. They are actually a specific individual complaint sent to the field, and the supervisor of the line actually investigates and responds to each and every complaint. And, you know, the trend line gives you the numbers, but the actual resolutions are done directly with the bus operator with an interview to determine that they, in fact, did approach a 50% number and could not pick up a passenger. Or in some typical bypass complaints prior to COVID, there may have been a dispute as to whether the customer was in the bus stop or flagged the bus down at a bus stop that serves multiple lines. There are a number of times the lighting, there are a number of reasons that a customer may be bypassed. But, you know, by and large, it is investigated and a resolution is brought forth whether, you know, the driver goes into the grievance procedure or not. It is done down at the garage level to the driver level. So we pay attention to this and treat it very importantly.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Mike, that was very helpful. Thanks.
Thank you. Next is the cost of service update, Jeff Bernstein.
Thank you and good morning. This next slide presents our key performance indicators related to our cost of service as mandated by the New Jersey Transit reform legislation. In May, across all modes and on the average per passenger basis, we recognized revenues of approximately $1.85 on cost of $30.84 for a recovery ratio of 6.0%. Per passenger subsidies of between $11.30 and $64.59 were required for bus, rail, and light rail service, with fare box recovery ratios of 9.9%, 5.9%, and 4.2% respectively. Access Link's recovery ratio was negligible in May. Thank you. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Board Member Fulton, any questions or comments?
No comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
Nope, I'm good. Thanks.
Thank you. Next is the COVID-19 travel survey results. Susan O'Donnell.
Good morning. I'm going to start with the highlights slide, but before I jump into that, I'll just give a quick overview of the survey questions and the design of the survey. It had three main sections. The first section started with a screener question to determine if the respondent had taken New Jersey Transit by any mode for any purpose in the 6 months before the COVID travel restrictions. If they had, then it proceeded with questions about the mode that they used most and for the trip purpose that they used most to kind of focus in the survey responses. And we asked questions about how frequently they used that mode before COVID, to what destination did they travel to, what time did they depart, and questions like that. The second section focused on the 2 weeks prior to the survey. And as you can see on the slide with highlights, it was conducted in early April. So we were looking at late March, early April travel after the COVID travel restrictions. And we asked, were they still traveling on that mode for that trip purpose? If they said yes, we went into detail, or they could have said they were traveling by a different mode. So either way, if they were still traveling one way or another, we had follow-up questions, either what mode were they using, trip frequency, departure time, and destination if they maybe were traveling to a new work location or a new location. And if they weren't traveling, particularly for work and school trips, we asked questions about why, whether they were working or attending school remotely, or if they were furloughed or lost a job or were caring for family members and not working or going to school. And then the final section was our standard demographics question with an added question about work industry, since we knew that that would likely be important in understanding the work industry in the future as people start returning back to work. On the highlights page, you see that the results really were market-based and sort of a tale of two markets, with the New York market being the rail and the New York bus, mostly people working from home, and the local bus market, both North and South Jersey and Access Link, were continuing to travel. The slides that continue focus mostly on the work responses, as that's our largest market. So in slide three, the section under still traveling for work is people that were making at least one trip in the last 2 weeks to travel for the work trip. So they may still be traveling, but they may not be traveling as frequently as they had been before COVID. And you can see the numbers for rail and New York bus are in the 20s and 12%, and the local bus are much higher, North Jersey local and South Jersey. And you can see that the rail and the New York market tend to have more people working from home than the local bus. Moving on to slide four, that slide focuses on the work trips and the people who were still traveling. So what this slide shows is that most people are still traveling the same way. So they're still using our service. And it's even fairly high for the local bus market in the 80% range. And the second highest tends to be the drive, whether it's driving alone or driving with other passengers or someone driving you. Moving on to slide five, looks at the primary purpose that people were traveling for, and work again was the highest purpose except for Access Link. And you can see in the during COVID percentages, it's even higher, and that's probably likely to reduction in the non-work trips that were occurring. And Access Link has medical as the highest, both pre and post, and I think work is the second highest. Moving on to slide six, this looks to trip frequency. So as I said earlier, the during COVID trip frequency for work is a fair amount less, particularly in the New York markets, and even a little bit less in the local bus market. Moving on to slide seven, this looks at the time that people departed and shows a movement more toward a 4 hour peak, as opposed to the traditional 7 to 9 peak. And this could be people traveling earlier because of crowding and, you know, wanting to social distance more, but it's also likely less of those work trips that are traveling in the traditional peak who are now working from home. On slide 8, this talks to the industry. So pre-COVID, particularly in the New York market and light rail, with Hudson Bergen Light Rail being the predominant service, people in the financial market were the top work industry, while during COVID, it's much more health and pharma and food and beverage. On slide 9, it shows a lot of the transit captivity and transit dependence of local bus riders. As you can see, both pre and during COVID, but even a little higher during COVID, there's over 80% or more who have zero or one autos available, while the rail market and the New York bus market has a higher percentage. Or a lower percentage, sorry, of people that have one or less vehicles available. On slide 10, it looks at income, and you can see in the South Jersey and North Jersey local bus market, during COVID, over 90% of the riders make $75,000 or less per year. So they tend to be in the lower income range. On slide 11, we just did a comparison. We asked those customers that were still riding in April during the survey to rate their satisfaction on a scale of 0 to 10. And we compared it to the most recent customer satisfaction survey, which was done in November. And you can see satisfaction is still high and even in many cases a little higher during COVID. And I think that speaks to a lot of the comments, people were very grateful for our service because it was the only way that they could get to their job. And, they were grateful that we were still out there running it. And then the last slide is the willingness to recommend. How willing are you to recommend a friend or family? And this also is along the lines of our previous ratings from the previous customer sat survey. And in conclusion, we have been sharing this presentation with the business lines, operations, comms, and also our regional pandemic planning team. This says we're preparing. Well, we actually launched what's known now as COVID travel survey number 2. We sent it out to the respondents who provided emails from the first survey, and we've asked a number of questions to understand how they're currently traveling, what they're hearing with those that were working from home, what they're hearing from employers in terms of return to work and staggered work hours, and a whole series of questions that I'll be happy to share at a future meeting. And also just a note that, traditionally we would have done our customer satisfaction survey this spring in May or June, but we've decided to postpone that because we feel doing these travel surveys are more important to understand how people are traveling so we can prepare for their return. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Fulton, any questions or comments?
Interesting. Very, very, very good. I suspect you'll be doing a lot of this over the next year or so, if not longer.
Yes. Well, hopefully not longer, but yes.
Cedric, sorry to interrupt, but I just say for Susan, just one footnote that I'd like to add. It's Kevin. That in addition, we've been giving the COVID briefings and updates, but under our command structure for the recovery effort under Jeannie Kwan, Jeremy Clandall Byron, Jeremy's been leading the effort of doing a lot of the focus groups on the customer sentiment, following up on what Susan just presented and the upcoming survey, and doing a batch of focus groups that is also interesting, using Suzy.com, et cetera, to look at, those kind of efforts to in the interim as well, in coordination with the customer service, the planning group. So, some really interesting data coming out of that.
Yeah, I like the idea of understanding what the employers are going to be doing as it impacts the behavior of the riders. So that will be information I think would be helpful. So there's a burning question, and Kevin, we've been talking about this almost since the very beginning. I don't know if it's expressed or can be implied, about fear. And so I would suspect that many of the people here, you know, one, were essential, and two, you know, needed to keep their jobs. So they pressed through. And so I don't know if it's possible to extrapolate from that population and how it could apply to other riders, people's willingness to come back. I look at the last slide on page 12. And so, you know, there seems to be some willingness to recommend in COVID, which I guess should be positive. I mean, everything is 70 or greater. So in spite of COVID and the realities of it, particularly in New York and New Jersey, people are still willing to recommend, you know, riding a train or a bus, which I think says a lot. What are your thoughts?
I would say yes. You know, we've been looking at a lot of research. You know, it just seems like everyone is doing a survey. So we've definitely looked at surveys from partner transit agencies and then other national surveys. And fear is definitely a concern. I think a lot of the concern is what other people are doing. You know, what are the other customers? Are they going to stay away from me? Are they going to wear a mask? So some questions that we asked in this survey, the new round of COVID-2, are what in your last trip, what percent of customers did you observe wearing a mask? How easy or hard was it for you to social distance? And my personal thinking was if those numbers were low, that maybe we could use a communication campaign to, you know, encourage people to get in line. What I can tell you is we've gotten about 10,000 surveys back so far, and they're fairly high. I mean, it could change over time, but it looks like people are wearing masks and are doing pretty well social distancing. So maybe that's another message to help alleviate the fear that, hey, we did a survey from passengers who are still riding. Because I know personally, I've seen people post on Facebook, you know, community forums, I have to go back. What are you seeing? So like they're asking other fellow passengers what they're seeing. So, you know, we'll have some survey data that can help share that. So that's one approach.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, Cedric, not to hijack me, but what we are seeing is that both on the seven states call, we had one last night again. You were representing New Jersey. That is, you know, really a key indicator of confidence. Some of the smaller states haven't done as robust surveys as we've done, but working with UITP, we've seen the systems that are coming back with the highest percentage, which is certainly of interest to Bill Vaccaro as well. But, you know, places like Vienna, Auckland, New Zealand is back to like 70%. They took a big dip. They were down in the single digits and they've come back strong. Whereas places like Rio, they don't feel that, you know, the people don't have the confidence in the system. And, you know, they hit the bottom a while ago, but they're still, you know, down in the 20% range on the comeback for those who were ahead of us on the curve, on the, COVID curve. So, that confidence of, you know, it starts, I guess, with the Department of Health, sort of above our pay grade, you know, on the macro or the wholesale issue. But to the degree that people feel New Jersey has gotten a control of it on the health side, then we really see it's getting that messaging out and safety. And the systems that have done that overseas, they are seeing, you know, Paris, I think, is around 50% now, 40 to 50%. So we're watching those trends and in touch with, you know, the major systems in overseas as well to see. But that does seem to be the message, you know, that people feel comfortable. Otherwise, they're going, you know, they're staying with vehicles, you know, cars.
All right. I appreciate the information. Look forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Gordon, any questions or comments?
Just a comment. I wanted to thank Susan for a really very interesting report. And one of the things I found most interesting was the chart on the industries represented by the ridership. And what struck me was how really critical New Jersey Transit was to the healthcare sector in keeping those healthcare workers able to continue going to their jobs and serving the public. You know, just reinforced, I think, what we all believed. But very interesting data. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Board Member Rasmussen, any questions or comments?
No questions, no comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Caulfield, any questions or comments?
Yeah, just what was the deadline for when the responses will come back on the new survey?
Good question. We're closing it on July 2nd. Right before 4th of July weekend. So it's a pretty short turnaround, although the other one we had out about 10 days.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you. Board members, that concludes the agenda for the Operations and Customer Service Committee. We will disconnect the telephone for this meeting and go right into the Administration Committee meeting. Thank you.